Hey, everybody, it's Mark Patterson. I'm back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And before I get on to my extraordinary guest this week, I want to remind everybody that if they're interested in what I'm up to, you can find that out at www.markpattersonnfl.com. As many of you know, I'm headed to Mount Everest in the spring of 2021. You can follow that journey on that website. There's actually a Garmin plugin that I have on there where you can actually follow me going up and down the mountain. I'll be up there for 2 months. And associated with that, of course, I continue to try to raise money and awareness on something I call Amelia's Everest, the Lhotse Challenge. I partner with Higher Ground, outstanding organization here in Sun Valley, Los Angeles, and New York. And it's all about trying to help people. In the case of my daughter, Amelia, she has epilepsy, but with this organization, it's centered largely around many of the military folk who have had cognitive issues or amputees or something like that. So it's a great cause. And anyways, we are en route to raising that money and as we march towards that magical date in late March. Okay, so I want to turn my attention now to the podcast. I've got a special guy on the program today, former Heisman Trophy winner, Danny Werfel. Danny, how you doing?
Mark, it's great to be on the show. And I didn't know about the Everest trip coming up. That's fantastic. Good to hear.
Well, it's not just Mount Everest, but trying to become the first NFL player to ever climb the seven summits. I've climbed six of the seven. I've been in two of the six twice. Really inspiring project. One of those two mountains I've been on is Mount Kilimanjaro. I've been up to the top. My last time I was there was with fellow NFL player Chris Long, a son of Howie, and he's got a project called Water Boys. And so it's actually Jim Moore and myself raised $47,000, and we funded and built our own water well for the people of the Maasai tribe down there in Serengeti. And we actually visited those folks, and it was so emotional from the standpoint of really getting your hands dirty and involved in something, not just donating money, but putting your time towards that and seeing the impact and the benefits. So many of these tribes don't have water wells, and so they pack these girls, mostly girls, with 5 gallon buckets on their head. They walk, 3 to 5 miles down to a dirty river. And many times they get attacked by a lion or they get raped and other awful things. And so what a gift for us to be able to, our little slice, it's small in the big picture of what people in the world need. But at the same time, it was really heartfelt. And so something I've been committed to in terms of trying to help others. And I think we're going to get into this because you're a man who has really focused much of your post-football life around trying to help and empower others. And it's just, when you can take the light that in the past has been shown on either me or in your case, being a Heisman Trophy winner guy, and really like, how can I help? How can I pay it forward? How can I make somebody else's lives better? It's really incredible. So thanks for saying that. And, yeah. Actually, I want to get into that now. Normally in these podcasts, I go back and I like kind of the chronological story of, you grew up in Florida and you were this all-world quarterback and you were one of the top high school quarterback recruits. You end up going to Florida, sort of telling your story here. But at the end of the day, you really had a magical run and a lot of those things that so many kids growing up aspire to be. And before we get into the foundations and a lot of the service that you do today, what really struck me is this: you're a quarterback and you were a great leader of men. You accomplished a lot of things, but where did that foundational piece come from in your life that helped you really get there's a bigger picture to all this?
Well, I definitely have to thank my family and sort of the foundation of my parents. I remember being young and winning something, bragging about it. And my dad, I'll never forget a look he gave me in fourth grade when he found out I was bragging, a sense. And he's like, that's not how we do things. And so there was this tension of always wanting to win, but at the same time trying to be humble about it and recognize that it's not all all about you. You know, I have a long history. I think that the deeper answer to that question is a lot of my understanding of the world and not seeing yourself as the center comes from my faith. And there's a long line of Christian faith in my family. And my dad was an Air Force chaplain and lots of other folks in family. So part of the way that we understand our faith is to live it in a way that really impacts other people. And so I think that was very foundational for me. And then at different points, kind of as I got older, kind of recognizing that and embracing it for myself.
I think that's a real challenge too, because, we share a lot in common. You know, literally, we both stood out in high school. We both went on to major universities. I went to the University of Washington, played under legendary coach Don James. You played under Steve Spurrier. And then I played for the Saints. I was traded from the Raiders, actually. But, you know, you're a fourth-round draft pick. I'm a seventh-round draft pick. And we had more or less the same type of career in the NFL. And when you have that kind of success, it I think it's sometimes, like you were saying before, it's hard because so much focus is on you, and especially as the quarterback, and especially you're a Heisman Trophy winner, and you get all that attention. And every like December 10th, 6th, 7th, 8th, right in there, they had that big ceremony back in New York. And for you not to absorb that and almost had like the Johnny Manziel effect where it just gets out of control. And to be able to step outside that again and continue to think about how can I serve others by having this attention put on me, I think is a very unique skill set that not that many, it's easy to say, it's hard to do.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, part of it is really being blessed with the people that were around me too. I mean, I remember there's a family in college that I was very close with, and I vividly remember, I think it was after a game where I threw 6 touchdowns on a Saturday, and I was having a meal at their house on Sunday afternoon. And when we finished, I got up to leave, and the mom's like, "What are you doing?" Like, we were going to go do something. And she's like, "You pick up your plate like everybody else, you go clean your dishes, and then you can go do something." And, you know, having people like that in your life, I think has meant a lot. And so I very intentionally all throughout that time tried to have people that I was close with that didn't get caught up in the whole football thing and that really could see me and try to treat me as a person more than this incredible train of excitement that kind of comes along with what happens with the college football world. And so, you know, I think just fortunate with a lot of other people in my life and having some value to aspire to. And I'll have to also admit, you know, I think as much as I'm, you know, you're trying to be humble, it's a hard thing to do. So there's probably times where I'm faking it like everyone else. I'm still trying to, my lifelong journey is to actually become the person that I always kind of thought or wanted to be, but actually be that in an authentic way. Mm-hmm.
No, I love that. And I think that is the key to success. That is the magical key to success I have found in my life, is understanding that the more authentic you can be, whether it's good news or bad news or something in between, you know, the more rewards you're going to get on the other side. And people are going to appreciate who you are at a deeper level. So it's not just this high level, how you doing? Great. How you doing? Great. How you doing? Fine. You know, you're really getting down to the meat of what's going on. And then you can serve other people, and they can identify with you. You're this brilliant football player. You've had all these amazing awards. And if you're not able to go down to the level of some of these really amazing stories, impoverished stories of these people in New Orleans and Atlanta and other places and in the projects and everything else, if you're not able to relate to them, you know, you're not going to be able to actually move the ball down the field, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you never want to be around somebody who thinks they're better than you are. I mean, my son's on a soccer team, and there's a couple of kids on the team that are really good, but he just struggles because they walk around like they know they're good. And so he immediately doesn't feel connected to them. And so I think the ability to be honest and to be real and to share your own struggles and to walk with people and to listen, you know, I mean, I think I noticed I was going to write a book. It's kind of a joke about how when you're sometimes when you're successful, it can stunt your growth as a human being. I joke that it'd be like how the Heisman stiff-armed me. And, you know, this idea where, you know, when you tell a joke, everyone laughs, you think you're funny, but maybe you're just popular, or you interrupt a lot. You're a terrible listener. Just a lot of things that come along with it, where you suck all the air out of every room you're in, as opposed to sort of really give space for other people to be there and exist and share their thoughts. I think all those are things that are, I mean, they're hard for people to learn. And then sometimes when you're very successful, it you almost kind of get a pass on some of those things. So it's sometimes the most successful people in a room are often the least developed.
I've seen that, trust me. And I've had plenty of peaks and I've had plenty of valleys, you know, in my time, especially as an athlete. You know, you're going to get knocked around a little bit. It's not going to always go your way, but it's really just a reflection of life. One of the things that, again, I'll go back to kind of where I started. I had an interview the other day with another fellow football guy, wonderful person, super sensitive. And it's taken him 33 years to kind of get over the fact that he didn't make the NFL and he didn't turn out to be the superstar in college. And he's really struggled with that. And I think a lot of it is because he's been focused on what happened to him in the past. And I think for all of us is that you got to keep looking ahead and what's around the corner. And like you said, when you take it, the focus off yourself, why did me, and put it on you, and how can I help? I think that is part of the remedy towards pulling yourself out of any place, dark place that you might be in. I want to talk about your time. So you go, you win the Heisman Trophy. It's incredible. I can only imagine. I never won it, just so you know, but I always wanted to, and you did. So good for you. But, you know, there's all the excitement and the hoopla around that. You're a big star in Florida. Now you get drafted in the fourth round by the Saints. So as I said, I played down there in their first winning season ever, 1987. Yeah, I was there for a few years, but it's an amazing town. And one thing that people don't know about New Orleans is that there's kind of a checkerboard, if you will, of super nice neighborhoods right in kind of central New Orleans, and then right next to it is a project, and then a beautiful neighborhood and a project. And so you got involved in something called Desire Street Ministries, and that's where you are today. You're the executive director. Tell us what that's all about and kind of what your whole mission is.
Sure. Well, kind of back in those days, I was drafted by the Saints and just felt like I wanted to be a part of something to help people. So I was kind of looking around and I didn't have anything specific I was looking for. And just a unique series of coincidences, if you will, or perhaps divine intervention, if you believe that, led me to a small organization in the 9th Ward of New Orleans working in the Desire Housing Project called Desire Street Ministries. And it was working with families and kids in the neighborhood trying to raise up leaders with the goal, really, sounds insane, but to help transform at one time the worst neighborhood in the country into a desirable, wonderful place to live. It's just, and so it's a very holistic mission. I was very excited about being a part of that and also loved the idea that it was about not just that neighborhood, but eventually helping other neighborhoods grow. And so I began volunteering back in the days. I mean, I remember the first time driving into the neighborhood, there were these old project buildings that once was the second largest public housing project in the country. And they were really old. I mean, they were built in the 50s. And so, you know, by the mid 90s, they were definitely condemned. It should have been torn down. I couldn't believe it. It looked like seeing an old World War II building. And as I drove by these empty buildings, I see a girl walk out with a doll, a little girl. And then I realized that she was living there, that every so often in these projects, you see an air conditioner and there were people living in these neighborhoods. And my heart was broken. Just definitely wanted to be a part of helping and making something better. And so Desire Street's very holistic. So at the time that we had started an after school program and then we started a school, we had started building houses. We had started helping people get into jobs and businesses, and we started a health clinic and a church. And so it's a very kind of a holistic way of helping people in a neighborhood develop and grow their neighborhood to transform it. And so in the years since Katrina, I became the director in 2005. And we moved our headquarters to Atlanta to expand. And what we do now is we basically, instead of starting and running new Desire Streets, we found that there are already heroes living and working in neighborhoods all over the country. But so often they just don't have the resources they need, the training, the support. So rather than these heroes having an incredible effect on their neighborhood, they're often burning out or just hanging on. So really what Desire Street does now is we partner with leaders to develop thriving and sustainable works in the inner city. Our new mission kind of is to develop 20 thriving and sustainable urban ministries in the next 5 years. We're really excited about how that works and the things that we do to support them. So as you can see, I could talk about it for a while, but that's the shortest answer to your question I can give you.
No, that's fantastic. So give me an idea specifically. So you just gave me the 30,000 foot, you know, view of what you guys do. It's wonderful. It's amazing. And congratulations for your position. You know, great leader, quarterbacks out there calling the shots and working with people. It's awesome. Give me a tangible example of where you've gone into one of these communities. You've either paired with an existing star that you have that you identify as a team leader, but where there's had the impact on the girl with the doll or the little boy who didn't have a ball to play with or something. What, give me an example of how you guys have made real impact.
Yeah, so just one here in Atlanta is an organization called Paw Kids. And there was a woman named LaTanya Gates who was trying to lead this organization. She had an incredibly challenging life. She was born, her mother was in prison and addicted to different kind of drugs. And so she had a rough time even just surviving as a girl. She grows up, people pour into her. So she wants to make a difference. So she's got all this energy, but, you know, she's got passion and vision, but hasn't ever run an organization, set up a 501c3, figured out how to get board of directors, figured out funding streams. So we've been working with her for the last 6 years and she's up and running. She's got an effective board. We help her with her fundraising. She has a coach that's touching base with her each week and visits every couple months and spends a day with her. We have cohort training where we go through different aspects of being a leader. We have a sort of an assessment that we do of them and their organization. And one of my favorite things we do is we do retreats. So we have a family retreat each year in Colorado where we're hiking up mini summits, have a lot of fun. Then we have a couples retreat and a women's retreat. It's this really powerful time. And then, you know, one of the things else I love to do is we help tell their stories to a broader audience. So more people get to hear about LaTanya, more people get to come in. And so what she's doing is incredible there. And so our job is sort of to keep her going. And her job is to work in the neighborhood and especially with the youth there, they've got an after school program and now they're really working on food distribution. They've also started a medical clinic and some healthcare there. And then they've partnered because she's healthy now, she's helping to launch some other organizations that she's not going to have to run. So I love the old scene from the movie Superman, where Lois Lane falls off the building. And as she's going down, Superman flies in and catches her. And he says, "Don't worry, I've got you." And then she says, "Who's got you?" Desire Street. There's people everywhere flying in to help. We're there to help them.
Now, that's great. So what is that like for you? I'm almost envisioning almost like your parents when you were nominated and then won the Heisman Trophy. So the correlation here is when you take somebody like her and you lift her up and you see that transformation and you see where she's going, that must make you feel like the proud papa, just her confidence and her direction and her purpose and her why, and all those things tie together.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good example. Probably I feel a little more like a proud brother, someone that's in there right alongside and doesn't always have all the answers, but is committed to walking the walk with them. And, I also in particular, my heart has been in and working and as it relates to a lot of these happen to be African-American neighborhoods and leaders and just over the years of getting to know and listen and be in deep relationships with people, it also makes me extra encouraged that so many of our leaders are people of color that so often don't get the same, you know, levels of trust from donors that I would get, or the same opportunities. And so to see them rise up and be so successful is extra special as well.
Yeah. And it's wonderful too. Like in this crazy time right now, we're recording this on October 15th I'm not going to say we're out of it, cause we're not, but the whole Black Lives Matter issues that have gone on around, and, you know, anything that any one of us can do to help and participate and make the world a better place, you know, certainly you're doing your part, and we all appreciate that. I think you guys have a golf tournament. Maybe it's been postponed because of the Desire Cup. So you bring in a lot of Nobles. Is that kind of your core fundraising?
Yeah, that's event. A single event we do. We do it the weekend of the Florida-Georgia football game. It's a big Southeastern tradition. And we have Coach Dooley and Spurrier. We've had Herschel Walker and Emmett Smith and Tim Tebow. And so, yeah, we're doing it. We're limited this year with COVID, but we're doing it at the end of the month, right before Halloween. And, we can't really have too many more people. But if anybody wants to check us out or participate virtually or support it, desirestreet.org, you can find all the information there.
We opened the pod and I said, you know, you've done such a wonderful job in terms of really seeing the bigger picture of life and, you know, your place in terms of giving back and paying it forward. I'm interested in your coach, Steve Spurrier. You know, he's a little bit like my old coach, except way more animated than Don James, but, you know, still a guy with a ton of success, national championship. You guys have won that back when you were the QB. And what was he like in terms of a guiding light, a mentorship? You know, we all need that. And where did he play a role in your life?
Well, I definitely can say that so much of the trajectory of my life is different and better because of having played for him. You know, he loves the nickname HBC head ball coach. And I would say that's what he was. He was an incredibly focused football coach and one of the best offensive minds ever, especially of that time. And so the success we had impacted us, and then lots of lessons that you pick up from here and there that stick with you over time. But he's definitely been a huge impact in my life.
Yeah, no, he looks like a wonderful guy and a wonderful guy to play for. And, you know, especially back in those days, the inter-rival between Miami, Florida State, and Florida, and it still is a hotbed of recruiting, was flipping insane. And you guys rose above that. And, you know, just like when I was at the University of Washington, we had all kinds of success. You have a lot of places you can choose from. And all you can do is look back in life and did you make the right or the wrong decision? And even though I had to wait it out a couple of years before I got my shot, it was the best thing ever. And I happened to pick the right place. And the other places that were courting me at the time, you know, they fired coaches and they had bad seasons and everything else. And so like you, you know, you just happened to be in the right place at the right time for the right guy.
Well, I do want to mention that too, because, you know, whenever you're successful, people always love to say, you know, anybody can do anything if you just try hard. And there's some truth to that. But I also think there should be a little more humility with those of us who have succeeded, because a lot of times we're just fortunate. You know, I mean, my dad was supposed to move to Minot, North Dakota when I was going into high school. And instead, at the last minute, they switched and moved to the panhandle of Florida, where the football's it's just amazing, a great place for college, high school football. So I could have been an ice fisherman, but I was just fortunate to be in the football area. And, you know, I love the phrase, in the right place at the right time with the right people. And it just doesn't happen a lot. And to recognize and to be grateful. I mean, I'm an obsessively hard worker. And so, yes, but, you know, I mean, even the ability to process fast, which I have, the ability to have good hand-eye coordination, I mean, a lot of that's just a gift. And to be able to recognize that, I think, makes you a little more humble. And then as you grow, hopefully you realize that all the gifts we have aren't simply for ourselves, but that we steward them in a way that help other people as well. And so that's one of the things I try to think about.
Yeah, no, it's great. And as you're talking about that, I'm thinking about my head coach and my parents were amazing in so many different ways, but I really didn't have the roadmap of what it meant to be a major college football player at the D1 level. And I needed that. And things were too easy for me. Maybe like you in high school, they were too easy for me. And I really had to learn what it meant to have a work ethic. And I'd always been out there in a gym rat, but you got to take gym rat times 1,000 if you want to be, you know, a cut above and survive. And it's really, whether I would have played or not, it really provided the roadmap to life in terms of all these different things I've been involved in and your life too. But certainly what you're saying about being in the right place at the right time with the right people, you know, is in play. Another thing that you do, you're involved in so many great things. This is really cool. And by the way, this trophy is either got to be as big or bigger than the Heisman Trophy, but the Werfel Trophy that you have, and it's really recognizing college football players' premier award for these different athletes who are also involved in the different communities. So again, you're providing a roadmap towards something to aspire towards, and that is super cool. So why don't you tell us more about that, when it started, and you know why you dreamt up this whole thing?
Well, once again, I'm the quarterback, so I get credit for everything that happened well that other people really dreamt up and worked hard on. But, you know, I mean, if I could simplify sort of how I want to be, my personal mission statement would be to inspire greater service in the world, just to really this kind of service above self idea. And so this, the College Football Award, the Werfel Trophy, is that it's a community service award given to a Division I college football player. And you know, we want to honor that player. We want to highlight their work. We want to honor all of our nominees and finalists and just show the world that there's some exciting things happening that kind of make us all want to do a little better, you know? And so we've had over 100 nominees the last couple of years. You get 12 semifinalists, 3 finalists, and then have to pick one winner. And it's been amazing. The young men over the years now that have won this award, that what they've gone on to do and what they're doing, and that fraternity that's just super special that most of them come back each year. And so I'm really, really excited about that. I think it's a way to have a great spotlight, the spotlight of college football highlighted and pointed in a direction that's not just about how well you did on the field, or, you know, how good of a player you are, but really, you know, what are you doing with the rest of your life and how are you helping other people?
Well, one of those guys that was on the list that I think has just been an absolute superstar is Tim Tebow. And I'm sure you're buddies with him. And, you know, I mean, the guy just has got this unrelentless discipline to life and not being sucked into the stardom around it and really making the right choices that are going to have a positive impact in life.
Yeah, I mean, he's got an energy level that's unparalleled by very many people in the world. And he applies that not just to his sport, but really to his drive to make the world better. And his foundation and the things that he's doing, it's just unbelievable. He's got a great supporting cast and just really proud of all the things that he's doing. He's really launched a new initiative around human trafficking that I think is outstanding and very focused. And they've partnered with some huge partners that are making a really, really big difference.
Yeah, you know, look, you know, both you guys won the Heisman Trophy, both won the national championship. And one of the things that I think, again, like anybody that's listening to this podcast right now, you know, thank you for listening, number one. But number two is you don't have to be a Heisman Trophy winner to get involved. And this is the point I try to keep making over and over. I've had to reinvent myself several times over. But anybody, I'm involved in this organization, as I mentioned at the beginning, called Higher Ground, and anybody can go down and volunteer, and anybody can go and pitch in, and, you know, anybody can go climb a mountain, right? And there's lots of other things. It's endless upon what you can do if you really want to get involved. You just more or less, you know, through an open invitation, if people want to get involved, come help out the foundation that you're part of, Desire Street. And there's just lots of way that people, it's not just all about money, but it's just contribution. And I think that's where you really start feeling your everybody's purpose in life is when they get involved and we all hold hands as a global community.
Yeah, I think absolutely. You know, you hit it on the head. People think you've got to do something huge or move mountains to make a difference. And, you know, I did early voting today. And when I came home, my son, who's 14, who just likes to argue about everything, says, "Why'd you vote? It ain't going to make a difference." I'm like, well, every little thing can make a difference, and you just never know. And so I do. I think any little thing that you do, you know, there's beautiful stories written about someone that just went out of their way to smile at somebody, and the impact that had on someone's life at the right moment is magical. And, you know, the other thing I'll say is, as I see a lot of people that are working and they have this sense that, you know, at some point down the road, maybe they'll make enough money or they'll get to a point where they can then retire, or somewhere down the road, they're going to be able to then focus on their philanthropy, if you will. But I just think, man, don't make that a single path. Make it dual. Wherever you are, do something now. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be later. And anything that you do, I'll go back. I probably should have started with this when you asked me about some things, but I have some key memories as a kid where I was involved in some things to help someone else. There was a player in one of my youth teams that got hurt, and the family didn't have the money for the surgery. And I just went around and started raising money and ended up, you know, at the time, I think maybe getting $500 from a lot of different people to present for half of this surgery. And I can remember that this kid and his family, like, I was so happy. It was such a joy to do something, to be a part of that. And it really isn't about my joy, but that's also where you realize that that's part of the way this thing's made to be, is we all have needs and we all have things to offer. And then as we begin to kind of mix and match those things, magic can happen.
No, you're on point exactly with what you just said. We all get so consumed around our own stuff, right? I didn't make enough money. I wish that I was taller. I wish I was this or that. And at the end of the day, when you take the focus off yourself and help others, it just makes all those things that really don't matter go away, right? And there's so much more fulfillment in putting your head on the pillow every night, going to sleep, and what you're going to do the following day. I don't know. I think if anybody can figure it out, and, you know, look, I'm just one teeny tiny piece of the puzzle and trying to do what I can do. But every single time I step up and I'm involved, it's just such a magical feeling, and it's wonderful. I wish everybody could do it, and everybody can do it. That's the whole point.
Yep. Let me make one other pitch too. When people start thinking about how can they serve, you know, they usually have a preconceived notion of what that'll look like. And in our case, you know, since we work with kids in under-resourced neighborhoods, a lot of people think, well, I'd love to help, but I'm not good working with kids or something. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you want to go do Habitat for Humanity, but you're really not good at building things with your hands or something. Well, what I like to say is everybody's good at something. And what you're good at, somebody probably has a need for that. So if you're intentional, you know, I talk to people that are in finance and accounting all the time. They're like, what can I do? And I'm like, are you kidding? Every nonprofit I know is dying for help with their accounting. Go volunteer and help them with their accounting. You know, if you're a lawyer, every nonprofit needs help with lawyers. You know, whatever you're good at, you probably can find, if you're intentional, a place where that need fits. And then you're able to lean with your expertise into an area that can really, really make a difference.
Yeah, I know. I love that. And of course, you're right. I have to ask one football question because it always fascinated me. And well, I'm 10 years in front of you. So you just had the luxury, or, you know, being in the right place at the right time, that wasn't afforded to me back when I played. But you played over in Europe for the Rhein Fire, which I think was in Germany. You guys won the championship. So I know that the NFL for a spell was trying to create this farm system, kind of like, you know, minor league baseball team, single A, double A, whatever analogy you want to make, but they're trying to create that in Europe. And so they have these satellite teams over there. What was that like playing in Europe? You know, just taking you're the big man on campus here in the US and Florida and everything else. You go on to to the Saints. And for 1 year, you take your talents and you go, you know, that direction. What was that like?
Man, that was a fantastic experience in so many ways. But the football piece for me was thrilling because the talent level was so high. I mean, it's all guys that are on NFL teams or trying to get on NFL teams that kind of right on the cusp. But by being over there, there wasn't this overwhelming sort of sense of pressure and where everybody's on edge and a loss means everyone's going to get fired. So you kind of took away some of the negative aspects and had great competition. And I loved it. I talk about being in a good place. The coach there was really had sort of recruited me to come and allowed me to have a lot of input and game planning and play calling. So that's something that doesn't happen very often. So I really loved it. Now it's very, very fun. Depending on which city you were in, it was a totally different experience. So some cities, they didn't have a lot of fans, but we were in Dusseldorf with the Rhine, near the Rhine River. The Rhine Fire was our team. And I mean, it'd be 20,000-30,000 people who are used to going to soccer games come and just, they called it a Rhine Fire party, and a football game happened to break out. And I don't know if they knew what was going on, you know. It'd be like, Danny Werfel, he's interesting, and everyone cheers, yay! You know, I don't think they were following it too well, but it was really fun. I think it was great, not just sort of a farm system, but also marketing for the sport itself nationally. And I don't share this much, especially with Gator fans, but that was one of my favorite years ever playing football, just the way that went that season, and to win a World Bowl was absolutely, absolutely fun.
That's awesome. That's awesome. There's a last quote I want to end with. When you get to where you're going, always remember to turn around and help the next person in line, and always remember to be humble and kind, by Tim McGraw. Beautiful song. And you've done that in your life. I'm so grateful that you came on the pod. Where can people find you? And because I was looking, you know, earlier, and there's a lot of links to what you're doing, but where can people find you?
Yeah, I mean, just for me directly, DannyWerfel.com. And that kind of connects to everything. So that's the main link, but also the DesireStreet.org is the stuff that we're doing. But if you go to DannyWerfel.com, you'll find all the different things that I'm involved in and hoping to make it better. The quote that I got on my wall, it says, look at all the things you've accomplished in your life and then say, that's a good start. You
know, yeah. And I believe that. Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, listen, appreciate it so much. He is the one, the only, Danny Werfel. Thank you.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.